Welcome to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. Well, next year, or in the spring, the North Carolina Festival of the Book is going to bring together writers from across North Carolina and, in fact, across the South and, to a certain degree, across the world, over the world. Not going to be here until April, the end of April, but I want to know more. So I've asked the festival's director, Aaron Greenwald, and our great friend from Chapel Hill, Shannon Ravenel, to come and tell us why they're excited about it. Aaron Greenwald, welcome.
Yeah, thank you very much.
And Shannon Ravenel, welcome back.
Thank you.
Your theme, Aaron, is it's about the story. Well, of course, it's writers. They're telling stories, aren't they?
Well,
what?
Well, we have to be. Well, you have to be sort of when you think up a theme, you have to be as sort of open ended as possible, so you can cram as much stuff in there as you want. But what we were really interested in with this festival to sort of do something different. You know, this festival has been around for a number of years, and it's been really good in the past. And
it's just forgive me for interrupting, but it's sponsored primarily by the libraries of the nearby universities.
That's exactly right.
We had it at Chapel Hill. It's been at State. It's going to be at Duke this year. People who know me know that the most exciting thing for me is it's free. Every bit of it is free, and you get to see you'll get to see the authors that Aaron and Shannon will be telling us about it. I think maybe there'll be some paid things, but it's by and large.
Every event entirely free.
So we're going to be learning about some of the authors who'll be there, but you get to meet them, shake hands with them, ask them questions.
You see them really close up,
and it's over a period of two or three days.
Right, and what's more important, or what the addition that we've added, and sort of to follow on the it's about the story theme, is that we've tried to put together writers in conversation. So rather than just a reading and a question and answer period, we've tried to pair writers who know one another, who are writing to a very similar audience, or who are writing around a similar theme, so that there's some rapport the moment that they sit down.
In other words, it'll not be just a reading, and it'll be a conversation or a little talk that's interrupted by the friend who'll be asking the questions that the people in the audience.
Exactly. It will be totally lively. It'll be brief readings right at the beginning, and then it will be conversations between two folks who are friends. And hopefully they will really be conversations. It won't just be someone asking questions of another one, but, for instance, Alan Gerganis, who was Ann Patchett's teacher, both as an undergraduate and as a graduate, talking about
the writing life,
and also what you can and can't teach writers.
That would be really good.
Now, what are they? All right, I'm really interested in this, and you don't know exactly what they're going to say, but you've heard them.
Well, here's
all talk about that. What would be the message that might come out of this conversation?
Well, here's the dirt: is that Ann Patchett said when I emailed her about this, she said people have been asking me for years what it would take for me to do a festival. And now we have an answer. Alan Gerganis.
Oh, that's great. That's really good.
But I love this. The theme is what you can and can't teach.
Right. And that was Alan's addition.
Yeah, and I like to ask every writer I can think of this question about it, and you get different answers. I mean, about what it is and what do you expect the answer might be.
Well, I don't know.
When you asked the question, you had some idea what the answer might be.
What you can, you can't teach.
Yeah, what you can,
oh,
you
both,
can't teach.
They'll both have different answers on that,
What would be your answer?
My answer would be, well, I have an answer, but I'm not
sure. Well, what would your answer be?
My answer would be that you can't teach anybody to write unless they have to write. That the person who will succeed as a writer is the person who can't not write.
Either because you mean something internally makes them
write,
or is it maybe that some people
you can learn a lot of things about writing from going to our graduate program, or from just writing a lot, or just being around people that write. But you can't succeed as a writer unless you have the drive, and it comes from within.
It's an important answer, but it's not the answer to that question of what you can teach and what you can't teach. It is a fundamental prerequisite to being a successful writer is that you just have to do it.
Well, you can't teach it.
You cannot teach that necessary element.
I'll tell you an interesting thing. We have another pairing of teacher and student. So there's a young writer named Tiare Jones who's written a couple novels now. Leaving Atlanta was one, and oh, I'm forgetting the second
Tiare.
One. Tiare. So Tiare's teacher at Spelman when she was a student there was Pearl Clegg, who's a great writer of many, many books. And what Tiare told me was that Pearl was the first person who treated her like a writer, you know, who believed that that longing, who believed in that longing, you know, who was able to say, well, Tiare, you could be a writer. You're going to be a writer. Of course you are.
And they're still very good friends.
They're still friends, and they're going to come to the festival and talk about.
It's so interesting to me that you jumped on that point because, again, it's not a teaching moment. It is that the teacher is an affirmer of the talent of his or her student. Not that the teacher really taught them anything. He just unleashed this kind of self-respect by saying, hey, you could be good. That's not really teaching. It's, what is it? It's coaching.
Well, it's exactly what Lewis Rubin has done all his life. It's paying attention in a way that feels important to the student.
I've read, we're familiar with Lewis, and he's
my mentor.
Well, your mentor and your partner in crime.
Whatever.
But you hear that echo from his students that Lewis is...
paid attention.
One of his main contributions, in addition to the teaching and the coaching, was affirming the talent, which... is sort of the license to keep going with
That's
it.
Right.
That you're
That's exactly
that you
what it is.
You identify the teacher.
He took it seriously, or he takes it seriously. If he had a student who wanted to write, he took the student seriously, no matter how bad the writing was. The fact that the person wanted to write, and they can all get better, Lewis paid attention to that and took it seriously.
Well, that Shannon Ravenel, just pressing you because you've had to teach a lot of great writers to be better, being the editor, let's see how am I going to do. I love to sing, but I can't sing.
Me either.
But I had a music teacher once when I was taking music, not voice, who said I can make a singer out of it. I can't make a great singer out of you, but I can teach you to sing so that you can contribute to the choir. And he said I can do this for almost everybody. And so the question is, can you with someone who's motivated? Can you teach almost anybody to write?
I think you can teach. I think that you can do all kinds of things to help the person get better. One of the great things that Lewis did for his students was give them things to read that applied and that, you know, as examples of what they were trying to do. And he also insisted on lots and lots and lots and lots of revision and lots of writing. So I think you can, yes, you can get, anybody can get better in writing if they practice it and if they have an ear. And
if they, what does that mean?
It just means that they can look at their writing and hear it, I think. And that gets more and more acute as you do it. A lot of writers read out loud what they've written to themselves to make sure it's sounding right.
And what's interesting is that these are precisely the questions we're asking at this we're trying to ask at this festival. Is like, so the principal question is, what is it about the creative process? You know, how do we get these writers to sort of open that up to us a little bit, so that we can understand how they do what we love so much?
I think we're all curious about that. At least those of us who are readers and who are friends, and to a certain extent, you know, kind of. Like I'm an aspiring professional basketball player still, you know, we have this, we want to know how all of that works, even though we're never going to be there. We want to know how it works so that this festival will be not just for writers or aspiring writers. It's for all of those of us who are fans and admirers of the writers.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, we have Barbara Kingsolver coming up. I mean, I don't know the last time that Barbara Kingsolver was in the area, but I know that
a long time
people are great fans of Barbara's work. Someone told me recently that they were wrapping books at Barnes and Noble, you know, for the holiday season, and during the 2 hours they were there, people had bought 6 Barbara Kingsolver books.
That's a really good number of books by somebody who hasn't had one in a while. Right. She doesn't have a new book, I don't think.
No. And I mean, what's more impressive, I think, or as equally impressive, is these are books that people are giving as gifts.
Yeah, that's so, really...
I tell you what, let's take a break.
Okay.
We're talking about the upcoming Festival of the Book. It'll be at the end of April, but we're getting a preview of it from its director, Aaron Greenwald, and helping me interrogate him is Shannon Ravenel. We'll be right back.
Carolina Performing Arts Series is pleased to present Swan Lake, presented by the Carolina Ballet in the Memorial Hall, Saturday, February 4th at 8 p.m. and Sunday, February 5th at 2 p.m. WCHL and the Carolina Performing Arts want to give you tickets to see the most popular ballet in history. Listen in to WCHL's The Morning Show with Ron Stutz every weekday morning from 6 to 9. And when you hear... be the fifth caller to win. Don't miss this chance to see ballet in its top form. Keep listening.
And now, here's Deborah Miller from A Southern Season.
From our legendary Tar Heels to our incomparable quality of life, our hometown pride is evident at every turn. Named one of America's outstanding retailers at the International Fancy Food Show, we're bursting at the seams with award-winning gifts of good taste, glorious flavors, and gustatory delights. Our family of customers extends far and wide, but we wouldn't even think of calling anywhere else home.
A Southern Season, Chapel Hill's landmark gourmet emporium at University Mall.
Who's Talking with D.G. Martin can be heard once again Sunday mornings on News Talk 1360 WCHL.
Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. We're talking about the upcoming North Carolina Festival of the Book. We got its director here, and although it won't be here until the end of April, we're getting an inside look at how it's coming together and what we're trying to accomplish. Shannon Ravenel is helping me.
I'm trying to help you.
Co-hostess. We're trying to find out what's going to be going on. One of the things... that Aaron has talked about, and Shannon, Barbara Kingsolver is coming. She's a very popular. She's got fans. There's no question that she's a successful writer. What does she bring to the festival other than just drawing a crowd?
Well, she's beloved.
She's real famous.
She is real famous and slightly rare. Also, her daughter is a freshman at Duke.
Is that right? Wow. Well, so that was the key to getting, one of the keys to getting
her. She was delighted. And also interesting, as this is largely a festival of Southern writers, Barbara has moved back from Arizona to the Virginia Appalachians.
Yeah, the first story I ever read of hers was called Rose Johnny, and it was published, I think, in the Virginia Quarterly, and it was very Southern. And then her books that came out later, much later, were not so Southern.
Right.
So I'm really interested to hear.
So these are, she will be writing stuff. If she writes stories, they will be eligible for inclusion now, because it'll be set in the South.
Set in the South. Well, that one was. That was set in Virginia.
But lately,
and I had always, in my mind, always associated Barbara Kingsolver with the South. And
so this will be kind of a celebration of a return to the Southern family. Kind of.
And she's going to do a really interesting thing for us. So first of all, she's going to talk in the Duke Chapel. And if you haven't been to the Duke Chapel, it is a magnificent space.
And this will be sort of the very first...
The kickoff.
We're calling it the keynote. It's the first thing that's taking place at Duke. We may have an event that precedes it in Durham proper. But Barbara is going to talk about the Bellwether Prize, which is a prize she inaugurated about 6 or 8 years ago, which is a cash prize that she gives out on a biennial basis for writing about social change, fiction writing about social change. So she gives... the total is free and clear on the internet. It's $20,000 she gives on a biennial basis. She brings together all of very, very well-known writers to form the panel, and she gives a prize for writing for social change.
Do you know any of the winners so far, Aaron?
I don't know any of the winners.
Like a short, it'd be short fiction.
No. It's a novel project.
And it's got to be published, or it could be an
No, that's what's even better. So it's unpublished writers, and HarperCollins then publishes the book.
Oh, that's really interesting. This is the first I knew of this. I'm glad to hear it.
So she's going to talk about, you know, we tried to give people real topics to talk about.
So she'll talk about what she's learned or what has happened or what kind of books have come up
or what
kind of people
or
what made her do it.
I would expect that she would write about why it's important to her.
Why she's willing to invest this much time in addition to the prize money all the time and other expenses.
And also probably how she addresses those questions of social justice in her own work.
Wow. Oh, well, now, at first I was so cool to this. Now I want to be sure that I hear her talk in the Duke Chapel. Maybe she'll preach a little bit from the pulpit on social change.
Anyway,
we're talking about the North Carolina Festival of the Book. It's upcoming. It'll be over in Durham and Duke at the end of April, but we're getting an inside look at the organization of it. And one of the things that's planned, Aaron, you put Shannon Ravenel in charge of a project. Why don't you get her to give us a report?
Well, Aaron has asked me to moderate a panel of three writers who provided prefaces to news stories from the
site. Oh, boy. Oh, no. I'm sorry to interrupt you. It just strikes me because I thought that there's a whole volume of that should be published of these prefaces to new stories
someday.
Okay. But keep going.
There are three very different preface writers.
And just again, the prefaces of
the
your
prefaces
of
to
your
my the anthology that I edited for 20 years called New Stories from the South, which is proceeding to continue. But not under, with me, under new series editor and guest editors. We don't need to talk about that.
Of these prefaces that I've read always deal, and you ask them to deal with the question of what
I don't
are
ask
stories
them to
from?
Do anything. They just do what they feel
but
like
they
doing.
They deal with the question that all of us ask, and that is, what makes a Southern story Southern? Or what is Southern literature, or is there such a thing?
So we have enlisted to help Shannon in this pursuit.
Who's going to do it?
Roy Blunt Jr.,
Yes.
Jill McCorkle.
Wow.
And Robert Olin Butler.
And they couldn't be three more different
people. Have different ideas.
Yeah.
And their
prefaces have been extremely different.
And so will they read the prefaces?
I don't know what they'll do. Aaron and I have to sit down and talk about this.
Well, talk about it.
Well, I would hope that they would read at least one sort of little patch of it that they think is particularly salient and important. And when they do that, I don't exactly know how I'm going to arrange this, and I also want to run it by Aaron, but I'd kind of like each of them to answer that question. Is there such a thing as Southern literature still? Was there ever? What makes it Southern? And I think because they all have such strong personalities, I think we'll get into sort of battle about it. That's what I'm hoping.
If you're participating, it will be a battle, that's for sure, because you have strong feelings about it.
I do have strong feelings about it, and yet I don't want to present mine. I want them
That'll be a question that you'll have to decide. Are you going to be moderator?
Jill is born-bred and always lived in the South. Robert Olin Butler, not only is he not Southern, but the people he writes about in the South, particularly the ones I like best, are his stories about immigrant Vietnamese who live on the Gulf Coast. And are they Southern writers? Is he a Southern?
He came from
writer?
South Vietnam.
Are they Southerners, I should have said.
Right.
And is he Southern? He's from Granite City, Illinois, but he lived for many years in Louisiana and now lives in Florida.
And he's also a master mimic.
And he's also a fabulous writer. I love his work. And Roy is very, very Southern. And yet has removed himself to the North, where he lives now.
Comments on the South.
And comments on the
South. And still talks with the thickest.
And seems to sort of want to be at a distance from the South that he sometimes mocks and sometimes upholds. But
a lot of people say they never even understood they were Southern until they left the South and had to look at it from some other
perspective. Yeah, lots of people have said that.
But now the question that if I were your boss in this project, if I were Aaron, I would say, are you going to be a moderator or a participant? And I would hope you're going to be a participant.
I think I'm called a moderator. I think that's what It says here.
We're sort of honoring Shannon with the event.
Which is very nice. It was really nice.
Because
I'm retiring from this anthology, and of course I will want to say that it's going to continue, and it's going to continue under a new format, and it's going to be great. But, you know, it's nice to be honored after 20 years. It's great.
I appreciate it. Sure. Better to have your eulogies
while
you're still
alive. Right.
but it's going to be quite a lively discussion.
But they're not going to be allowed to give me eulogies.
Don't you want her to participate as well as moderate?
Oh,
because
I will.
She's probably got stronger feelings about it than anybody else and more controversial feelings about.
Well, you know, what you want with a program is you want a little bit of a fight. I mean, good programs are a little mischievous. Right?
Yeah. And Roy, I mean, imagine Roy Blunt and Robert Olin Butler. At least I know them both pretty well, and I can't wait to see them together. I don't think they've ever participated in anything on the same stage, and it'll be really interesting. And then, of course, Jill will be there to make us all feel happy.
Make us smell the apple pie cooking from her mama's stove, and if that's not Southern, what else?
Here's one of the hard parts about the festival. So the same time that event is going on, Duke's president, Richard Broadhead, who is a great public speaker and a great moderator, is going to be talking with two of his former students.
You have to compete?
You do.
Oh,
that's the fun of a festival, is the splendor of riches. And so we have Dick talking with two former Yaleys, Tom Perrotta, who wrote Little Children, which is being turned into a movie, and Election, which was a movie with Reese Witherspoon and Matthew Broderick, and another of President Broadhead's students from Yale, Elizabeth Alexander. And what will be really interesting there is he was not a writing teacher. He's an English teacher. He's a teacher of literature.
Yes, he's one of the editors at Algonquin had him in a summer course at Middlebury, and she says there was no better.
No better teacher. And so our risk is that Shannon's going to get the panel started and slip out and go.
I won't be able to hear that.
I was saying that you will get up going and that you just leave. Well, that's a feature of the festival that is both bad and good, in the sense that you'll have choices and you'll probably miss some things. Even if you stay all day, you'll miss some things that you'd like to hear.
That's exactly right. But hopefully, what you want to create at a festival is a lot of energy. You know, you want people spilling from thing to thing, and you want there to be too much. You want there to be a little bit too much.
I agree. Well, we're talking about the upcoming Festival of the Book. It'll be in April of next year, April of 2006. Shannon Ravenel will be a participant and a moderator, and Aaron Greenwald is the director and is getting it organized. We're going to be right back to talk about it some more in just a second.
You know that TV show Desperate Housewives? I've been wondering, just why are they so desperate? What's missing in their lives? As a certified diamond doctor, I think I've got the answer. Hi, I'm Berkeley Grimble of Grimble Jewelers, Chapel Hill Certified Diamond Doctor. After hours of rigorous analysis, I've come to the conclusion that they need bigger diamonds. I mean, take a look at them. Note the absence of large diamond studs. The void in their lives is so obvious. The pain they must feel when they look in the mirror. Let's banish desperation forever. Hope is just a short drive to Grimble Jewelers.
Gets a pick from Noel, high post. Frazier on the drive, lays it up and wins. Dog followed by Hansbrough.
Imagine what would happen if coaching decisions were made at a corporate office somewhere else. Games are won and lost on the court, and like banking, a positive outcome depends on quick, responsive decision-making. I'm Larry Loser, President and CEO of Harrington Bank. We're building a winning tradition at Harrington Bank, and invite you to come experience the difference when your bank is locally owned and operated. Harrington Bank, you deserve banking like this.
You can hear D.G. Martin with a replay of Who's Talking from the whole week, Sunday mornings on News Talk 1360, WCHL.
Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. We're talking about the Festival of Book. It's scheduled for the last little bit of April. Coming up next year, we're getting an inside look at the planning of it. Aaron Greenwald, who is the director, is here with us, and Shannon Ravenel, who will be a participant, is helping me find out all the things I want to find out about it. Aaron, I think if there's any criticism that I've heard so far about the festival is that is from local folks who say there's not enough North Carolina, there's too much national stuff here. And surely if I've heard that, somebody must have said this. Others would say, hey, I get to see the North Carolina people more. Bring me people that I don't get to see. How did you wrestle with this, and how do you respond to that criticism?
Well, it's an interesting bit of criticism. We have a lot of North Carolina writers.
I would say so. I'm looking down this list.
From Alan Shapiro. I'm just looking at this list now. From Alan Shapiro to Michael McPhee to Jill McCorkle to Kay Gibbons to Doug Marlette to
Michael Parker, Will Blythe, Shannon Ravenel.
Mary Kay Andrews, who's now in Raleigh.
Yeah, who's not a Georgian anymore.
Right. So, it's a tough thing. You know, you want to create a festival that will draw a lot of people.
Shannon, you might be able to help me say this, because all of these people are my friends and I admire them a lot. But there is a, while we celebrate the great literary tradition of North Carolina, there is a certain insularness and pride to our
self-congratulatory.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. If I'm a North Carolina writer, if I'm not invited, I can't just say, hey, you didn't invite me. I have to say, hey, you didn't invite enough North Carolinians. Maybe you didn't get to me.
Well, what are you wanting me to help you say, DG? I don't quite get it. I think that I would say that North Carolina is very well represented here. I mean, it's an amazing. There are hardly any.
Well, you could argue, Shannon. You could argue it's the North Carolina Festival of the Book, and it's a festival.
But you want it to be more than just the locals. I mean, I think you want to have them played off against and with.
You've got two conflicting objectives, and Aaron's had to wrestle with it. One is to celebrate the North Carolina Festival of the Book, and the other is to bring North Carolina and let it share with what's going on the rest of the
year. I've been to many festivals, and probably the most successful and the granddaddy of the literary festivals in the South is the one in Nashville that comes every fall, and it is riddled with writers who are not from Tennessee. I mean, that's, you go there to see writers from all over America. And I think that the North Carolina Literary Festival is reaching for that kind of an audience that's really, broader than just local. And I think that Aaron's completely right to, have as many North Carolina writers as possible, but also to have as many other kinds of writers. And he has a very Southern basis, I think. A bias in this list, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's
after such a great defense, you hardly have to say anything.
Well, I do want to add, and sort of to pick up on the Southern point, what we tried to do with the festival is to reflect the changing face of North Carolina and the South.
And the South.
So that face is not just Southern writers. I mean, the readers here in our community in the Triangle don't just read Southern writers.
And they don't just come from the South either.
Right. I mean, what is it? For a number of years now, more than 50% of the residents of the state were born in another state. So that's significant. People are widely read and sophisticated and want to hear all sorts of different voices. And so we've tried to provide that while also putting together a festival that I would hope that people would come to this festival and look around and then be able to make some statements about the state of Southern literature.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I'm a mixed mind about it. The thing that you don't want to do is to have a festival that just celebrates what we've already got without stimulating us to reach out further. And you do, so the North Carolina authors who are participating a disservice if you don't provide the sort of Barbara Kingsolver star attractions to bring North Carolinians to get to know who they'll come to hear Barbara, but they wouldn't have come to hear
a
North Carolina writer, but then they do hear it.
Right.
So I don't know. I mean, I'm
the first literary festival brought in Julia Alvarez. Am I right?
Second one. The first one actually brought in John Grisham.
Oh, right. That's, you're completely right. And he did bring in a big crowd.
He did.
and Julie Alvarez did, and then the last one at State.
It was Alice Walker and Dennis Lehane.
Right.
Those are the two big names. But yeah. we're riddled with big names, you know.
You are.
From Tom Wolfe, who's coming, who has a Duke connection.
And, right. And Pat Conroy, who's got a, you know, Carolina connection. I mean, he's just next door, after all.
Right. So I do want to add about Pat Conroy, and I think this is so curious. So Pat Conroy and Doug Marlette, who's a novelist and also a Pulitzer Prize winning editorial cartoonist, are best friends. And apparently for the last and they're united by all sorts of things in the world. They say their military school background is part of it. They, for the last 20 years, they've been best friends. And apparently they talk on the phone every morning for an hour.
No kidding.
And so when I asked them to do this, they'd done plenty of events together where one introduces the other, so on and so forth. No one had ever asked them what their impact is on one another. And they were absolutely tickled that someone, you know, they were sort of saying, well, when is someone going to ask us to do a program together, you know?
So what have you – so as a part of the festival, for those people who joined us late, there's a lot of pairing up in the festival in which you have,
which
have two.
Which is completely new and innovative, I think. It's just great.
Two authors talking to each other about different kinds of things, but in this case about friendship.
And sort of collaboration too.
What impact one has on the other's work and life is that? What did you ask them to do?
Influence, I think. How do they influence each other?
Well, I mean, what I asked them to do was to talk about how those conversations they have every morning impact the work that they put out the rest of the day. And Bill Ferris, who runs the Center for the Study of the South, is going to moderate that panel that conversation for us. Although I'm sure that those guys will just go. But I'm really interested on how these two dudes
– I'd like to know how they think up enough to say for an hour every morning to each other.
My wife talks to her sister for an hour every morning. I couldn't talk to anybody more than 2 minutes. I don't think men have this quality of having being long.
Well, what's so interesting is my first reaction when Doug told me this and then Pat followed it up was – well, what must their wives think?
They've gone off somewhere.
No, I mean, this is not a man quality. I mean, or am I wrong? Am I sick?
No, I think you're absolutely right.
It's really fascinating. I can't wait to hear what they say about the conversation that they have that lasts an hour every morning.
Well, I can talk to you guys all day long, but now we have to take a break. I'm talking to Shannon Ravenel, and we're talking to the director of the North Carolina Festival of the Book, about that festival, which will be over in Durham in April. We'll be right back.
WCHL 1360, time now for Biography for Radio with Jack Perkins, brought to you locally by the Cedars and East West Partners Community.
He won fame and infamy on the motor racing track. His driving was sensational, but maybe also a little reckless. His story next on Biography for Radio.
Hey, Coach Jimmy Johnson, what are you doing at Sam's Club?
Stocking up for my big game party. I got this 50-inch high-definition plasma TV, buffalo hot wings, party trays, and 10 bags of Tostitos.
Tostitos? I'm going long. Throw me a bag.
I don't think so.
Aisle 15, I'm open.
Somebody get a stretcher. That's got to hurt.
Sam's Club. Everything you need for great big game memories is here. See our insert this Wednesday for big savings on great food items, electronics, and more. 10% service fee applies to all non-member purchases.
His father gave him a homemade pedal cart when he was only 4. The boy was soon driving like a demon. When he hit a lamppost, he was sent to a kart racing track for his own safety. By 1988, the daring teenager was driving professionally. He was signed on to a Formula 3 team and at age 21 earned a bonus of $30,000. He got it in cash, put it in a suitcase, and gave it to his father, who was badly in debt. The young driver's steely nerves swept him ahead, and by 1994, he was Formula 1 world champion. But he won the title only after colliding with Damon Hill. Other crashes followed, and critics were soon accusing him of recklessness. His aloof manner and obsession with fitness didn't help his soured public image. But by 2000, after he took Ferrari to its first world championship in two decades, he became a national hero in Italy. With seven championships and earnings of some $80 million a year to his credit, fans have given the nickname 10, 20, 30, Red Baron to German race car driver Michael Schumacher. For Biography, I'm Lawrence Scott.
Biography is a trademark of A&D.
Biography for Radio, brought to you on WCHL by the Cedars of Chapel Hill and East West Partners Community. The Cedars is the country's premier retirement community. Call 929-1995 to find out more on this very special community. Life has been good to you. Now it gets even better at the Cedars of Chapel Hill.
Who's Talking with D.G. Martin can be heard once again Sunday mornings on News Talk 1360 WCHL.
Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. In April of next year, over in Durham, the North Carolina Festival of the Book returns. It's great for lots of reasons. It's an assemblage on the stage of some of our most important and popular literary figures, but it's also an assembly of us, of people who love books, and a lot of the fun about it will be not just listening to the programs, but talking to people, meeting people that you haven't seen in a long time. It'll be a reunion of people, of readers and writers, and it's free. Don't have to pay anything. No cost. Just show up. And so I'm curious about what's going to be going on. So Shannon Ravenel and I got Aaron Greenwald, who's the director of the festival, to come tell us about it. And thanks for coming, Aaron.
Right. And let me just be totally clear about some of the logistics. The festival is totally free, and it's not, people listening, it's like, when was the last time that Duke University invited people onto their campus for a big free event?
Was it a basketball game?
Free basketball game?
So this is a
church.
Right. That's 11
o'clock
right.
At church.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. So I want to talk about something that I'm curious about, and that's that we invited one of our board members, one of the library's board members, is a fellow named Tex Williams, and Tex Williams said, "Well, you should invite my brother to the festival." And his brother is the Pulitzer Prize-winning poet C.K. Williams. So Tex convinced him, I think under the pretense of a family reunion, to come down for the festival. He teaches at Princeton. And apparently one of his good friends, and I think probably a student of his, is Alan Shapiro, who's the really great poet who teaches at UNC Chapel Hill. But what's most interesting about all of this thus far is that when I sent CK the list of all of the people who are participating in the festival, he picked out Shannon Ravenel, and he said, "Well, I'm really excited to see Shannon because she was my editor."
His first editor.
Well, is he excited so he can say, "Hey, look, I'm a success."
He is a big success, and I'm very proud of it. I was working at Houghton Mifflin, and he submitted his poems, his first collection of poems, to me at the suggestion of Anne Sexton, who was a friend of his, and maybe a teacher of his, I think. Anyway, Charlie, as he's called, was young and adorable, and the poems just blew me away. I didn't do anything except hand them to the printer.
But how do you edit? I didn't even know.
I didn't do much editing. I read. I think the only things I did were maybe to suggest moving some of them around a little bit. I certainly didn't get inside the poems and edit. I didn't know how. But
wow. So you're going to attract not only an audience of adoring fans who are going to come watch your panel, Shannon Ravenel, but a lot of the participants are coming just because you're on the program.
They're listening to Mr. Broadhead. But anyway, no, I can't wait to see him. I saw him. It's amazing about Charlie Williams and me because this has been years ago. It was 1968, I think. And about 10 years ago, I was in a bookstore in Paris, and he came in. And we didn't recognize each other. We don't look the same at all. But the store owner knew each of us, and
you all should know each other.
Well, she said, you might want to meet C.K. Williams, and I said, oh, my God.
I already know him.
I know you.
That's fantastic.
I can't wait to see him.
Well, it must be a bunch of other things that you've learned or that you are excited about, Aaron Greenwald, about this festival.
Well, one thing that I'm really excited about is that Kay Gibbons has a new book coming out in February. And when we were sort of looking for a way to plug Kay Gibbons into the festival, we really wanted to have her, and we were sort of trying to figure out these conversations. It was suggested to me that the great singer-songwriter Mary Chapin Carpenter, that Mary Chapin's favorite author in the world is Kay Gibbons.
Oh, how wonderful.
And that when Mary Chapin is looking for inspiration, she goes back to a printed interview between Kay Gibbons and Walker Percy.
That's right. There was such a thing. Yeah, I remember
and
that.
That's her.
I believe Walker Percy blurbed Ellen Foster, if I'm not mistaken.
I think that's right.
Yeah.
Oh, no. Where is that? Where can you get that?
It's at my office.
It's not online. Well, we'll try to find it online and give you a link to that. What you find, this is interesting to me in terms of, as Shannon pointed out earlier, you were a part of the New Yorker Festival in New York, so this is not a brand new kind of thing to you. But is this usual that as you start organizing these things that it is that if somebody comes, they're going to bring somebody else and leverage that?
I think it's terribly unusual, but it sort
is
of, it seemed coherent. As we started to do it, it became coherent to me. I mean, I guess that's the thing that I was sort of looking for again and again is, well, what's a coherent event? And it made sense to have Mary Chapin and Kay Gibbons talk to each other about their love of one another's work.
You have some other musical and word pairings, don't you?
I do. I mean, one North Carolina one, which is really interesting, is that we have North Carolina jangle pop legends, Don Dixon and Mitch Easter. These are the guys that produced REM's first album. They produced an album of music by Madison Smart Bell and Wynn Cooper. And it's called 40 Words for Fear. And so they're going to talk about that process. Madison and Wynn are writers, and they play music, but they're certainly not professional musicians. And they're going to talk about going into the studio with these legends.
Well,
that is going to be really great.
And that should be totally bizarre.
Is that the one Chris Stamey is involved in?
No, that's another conversation.
What? Tell
okay,
that.
So I'll tell you that. So I was really curious. You asked the question early on about what writers can learn or what can be learned. And I was really curious about what editors do and how editors push on writers. And as I sort of started talking a little bit to editors, and I sort of thought that there was a parallel between what an editor does and what a music producer does. And the festival has a fairly strong music focus. There are several musical events, including Elizabeth Spencer with the two folks who wrote the music and the book for
Light in the Piazza.
Light in the Piazza. Tony Winners, I think, both of them, or perhaps just the composer.
Maybe not.
Just Adam Gettle.
I've been wanting to meet Adam Gettle ever since Elizabeth Spencer started talking about him.
Yeah, he's Richard Rodgers' grandson, right?
Yeah.
So going back to this producer and book editor, I was really curious to get these people together to have a conversation. And so we were able to gather together Peter Gazzardi, who's an editor who's worked on everything from Douglas Adams to Deepak Chopra to Stephen Hawking.
And he's so articulate about what he does too.
Right, and he works out of a little office in Carrboro after having been in New York editing for a long time.
He was editor in chief of Crown.
Right.
Well, all right, you're already teaching me.
And
so
he's going to talk to Chris.
So he's going to talk with Chris Stamey, who I understand has been a copy editor, but who has also produced incredible stuff.
In his own studio.
In his own studio, from Ben Folds 5 to Alejandro Escovedo. Mm-hmm. Will Blythe is also going to be part of that conversation, who was the literary editor at Esquire for a number of years and who has a book forthcoming.
And is a Chapel Hill native.
And is a Chapel Hill native. And then we're also going to add Don Dixon, who I mentioned earlier and who produced, you know, the first REM album and then tons of stuff after that, including the Smithereens. And they're going to talk about how they push artists or suggest things to artists.
That the pushy editor like Shannon was and the pushy record producer are sort of the same coaches, arrangers, helping the person to develop into the
artist they can be. Been in Chris's studio because his wife was managing editor of Algonquin Books, and he recorded some books, he recorded Lee Smith's reading of The Last Girls. And I listened in, and he edited while she was reading. I mean, it's not so unlike what we do,
right?
But it's all done with computers, and it's amazing. I really look forward to that.
Well, you guys,
I think that's brilliant.
I guess I'm going to have to come to this festival because I haven't got a full dose. But we're out of time, and thank goodness you don't have to fit everything into an hour at the festival. But it's going to be jam packed. It'll be the Festival of the Book. North Carolina Festival of the Book will be in Durham at the end of April. Keep an ear out. We'll try to tell you some more later on. In the meantime, go to the webpage. We'll have a link to their webpage on our website. And thanks to you, Aaron Greenwald and Shannon Ravenel. Look forward to seeing you at the festival.
Thank you very much.
I appreciate it.
Right back here tomorrow.
This is Gerald Ramoyne, General Manager of Performance Automall. Over the years, you've heard me talk about how proud we are to be a sponsor of WCHL's Village Pride Awards and about the great work we do in our sales and service departments. But nobody can describe our passion and commitment better than our employees. The people at Performance arrive each day committed to a special relationship with you, our neighbor.
Hi, my name is Angela Howard. I work in the accounting department. I'm a senior staff accountant. Been here 10 years. I work in a great office. A lot of great people, a lot of teamwork. The people care about more than just coming to work every day. They care about each other and care about their customers. Performance can't be beat.
I couldn't have said it better. Every day we try to earn the right to be your car dealer as well as your neighbor. And when we say Performance can't be beat, we mean it.
I see trees of green, red roses too. I see them blue.
Living in Chapel Hill makes all of us realize what a wonderful world it is. And no one appreciates this more than the folks at Prudential Carolinas Realty. If you're thinking of investing in a home here in Chapel Hill or anywhere in our local area, make sure to get in touch with real estate experts at Prudential Carolinas Realty. Your Prudential agent will help you find exactly the home you're looking for in the location you want at a price you can afford. And Prudential always makes the home buying process a wonderful experience. Whatever your reason for selling, let Prudential put your home on the market for you. You can rest assured that it will be priced right and that Prudential will get it sold. Prudential Carolinas Realty, 1407 East Franklin Street. Call 929-2186 or log on to www.yourpru.com. Prudential, Chapel Hill. Rock solid in real estate.
Do you know your credit score? You should, because staying on top of your credit could help save you thousands of dollars. You can now get your credit score and credit report at freecreditreport.com.
I go online and in seconds I get my credit report and credit score free.
I can even print it right off my computer.
Staying on top of my credit helped me save a lot of money.
Get your free credit report and score when you sign up for a 30-day credit monitoring trial at freecreditreport.com. That's freecreditreport.com.
You may be sitting there right now wondering how you're going to make it through the day. Do you worry yourself sick, beat yourself up, or put yourself down? This isn't the real you. You used to be happy and have confidence in dreams, remember? Well, it's time to get it back. You owe it to yourself to pick up the phone and call for a powerful free tape that can help you get your life back. I'm Lucinda Bassett, founder of the Midwest Center for Stress and Anxiety. Please let me help you help yourself. Call 1-800-500-2001. That's 1-800-500-2001. 1-800-500-2001.
At home, at work, in the car. News Talk 1360, WCHL, Chapel Hill, Carrboro's News Talk and Tar Heel Station.